talk, Rabosai, a little bit more about Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer, the great Talmud of Rabbi Chaim, and his contribution to the Derech HaLimut. And we're looking now on page 354, and what we got up to is the paragraph that starts Biure Sugyos, which is the second paragraph on page 354. And we're going to start with the Sugya Masechta Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Dalid, which you'll see quoted here on the fourth line of the paragraph Biure Sugyos. And what Rav Zevin wants to illustrate here about Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer is that he had an uncanny ability to take a sugya that at the face of it defies any understanding. It's just beyond our comprehension. And put it in a very clear way so that we can, you know, it becomes accessible to us, we can understand the sugya. Now let's see what the sugya presents here in the machlokas between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. The case is where a mikvah on, we'll call it Sunday, was checked, and it was a full mikvah, 40 saw. On Monday, we'll call him Reuven, jumped into the mikvah. Reuven was Tamei. And lo and behold, on Tuesday, when we checked the mikvah second time around, it was Chaser. It was only 39 saw, not 40 saw. So you and I would have said, in such a case, we have a suffix, and we have to see which rules apply to the suffix. Shall we assume, on the one hand, the mikvah had a chazakah, and therefore we could assume that on Monday it was mole, but against that we have another argument that today on Tuesday we find it chaser. We can add a third element that when Reuven jumped into the mikvah, he was tameh, so he had a cheskas tumah, but on the other hand, the mikvah at that time had a cheskas tara, and it was mole, and therefore let's assume he's tar. And we could go back and forth and analyze the klolim of suffek as they apply here to this tameh and see whether we could be metarim or not. And yet, when the Gemara analyzes this issue about the mikvah and the tameh that jumped into the mikvah, it comes up with the most strange kind of analogy. So let's first mention the two shittas. Rabbi Tarfon is of the opinion that he's tar. And Rabbi Akiva argues and he says he's tameh. Rabbi Tarfon says, well, let's take a look at the case of a Kohen who's serving on the Mizbeach, and he brought the Karbon, he did the Avodah, he was makir of the Karbon, and then at some time subsequently, we find out that he's a posel, he's a chol, he's a ben grusha ben chalutza. So the halacha is, it's a sugi masechta makis, that avodas kshera, his avoda is kashi. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, says that your paradigm to decide the mikvah case is when a kohen does the avoda, and after he finishes bringing the karbo, we find out, we discover that he's a balmum, that he has a blemish on his body. And here the din is quite clear that any avodah that he did is possible. So the Mefarshim can't figure out this Gemara. There is no reason or logic that justifies this analogy. These are two worlds, two different types of halachic structures. The structure of the mikveh case is what we call hilchas safek. And we don't know how to analyze and what the din should be in the case of safek. That has nothing to do with the case of Kohen. In the case of Kohen, we're not dealing with the safek. We know exactly that he was born a ben grusha ben chalutza. We know exactly that he was born a balmum. Nothing happened today. And therefore, that's halacha vada. And you have to know what's the din if we found the Kohen did the avoda. And now we find out that he was posel. Should we undo the avoda? Should we not? In the case of Ben Grusha Mechalutza, we're going to leave the avoda where it is, and it's kshera. In the case of Balmum, the avoda is posel. We're going to have to replace it with another one. But those are the halachas that apply to a vadai. What does that have to do with Rabbi Tafra and Yekiva, who are at loggerheads over the dinim of Safed? Comes along Rabbi Zalman, and he says the following. And I love this piece. I think it's so much a product of Reb Chaim of the Brisket Derech. Let's see. So if you want to follow this inside, you may see a line, that starts with the word Ella. So if you're counting up from the bottom of the page, you will probably count approximately, let's say, 10, 11 lines. Ella. Okay then?
Yeah.
And in the middle of that line, he quotes, or shall he say, he summarizes the essence of this chiddush of Rabbi Zalman by saying the following. What's the machlokas between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva? What are they battling about? They're worried about the following question. On the one hand, the mikvah has a cheskas kosher. On Sunday, we checked it and we found it to be full. It's got 40 saw. On the other hand, the person, we'll call him Reuven, who jumped into the mikvah on Monday, he has a cheskas tameh, which means that he's considered tameh until you prove otherwise. So Rabbi Tarfon says the following. Mikvah zeh, this mikvah, b'cheskas shalem hu omed, we assume, until we know otherwise, that it is a complete kosher mikvah. And now, misafek, atabal chasro. You have a doubt that maybe already on Monday it was chaser. So Rabbi Tarfon's position is, and this is explicit in the Gemara Kiddushin, al techasrenu misafek. Don't assume, based on a safek, that the mikvah was chaser. Rabbi Akiva says, no. Even if you want to tell me that the mikvah has a cheskas mole, but Reuven who jumps into the mikvah, he wants to be mitar himself, so he has a cheskas tuma. And that tells you that if you have a suffer, you have to leave him until you know otherwise, you know, you're guilty until proven innocent, that your status as a tummy continues until you can prove otherwise. Is mi suffek atabolataro? You're telling me that maybe the mikvah was Shalem, was Mole at the time that he jumped in, is you have no right to change the status of the Tomei, who has a Cheskes Tomei, based on the Suffolk, that maybe the Mikvah was a good Mikvah. So the Kitzur, Rabbi Akiva says, if a Tomei jumps into a Suffolk Mikvah, he remains Tomei. That's the way Chazak operates. And Rabbi Tarfon says, well, before you look at the Adam, the person who jumped in, look at the Mikvah, and the Mikvah has a Chazak, and then it's Kashet. Okay. So comes along Rabbi Tarfon. Yeah, what do you say, David?
Could it be that when he jumped in, he knocked some water out? I could jump in here and display some water.
Very possible.
In which case it was full, but when he went in, it was full, now it's less full.
Correct.
Due to his action.
So we don't know. Did somebody else take out some water before Reuven jumped in? Or Reuven took out, at the time he went in, it was 40 saw. And the answer is, says Rabbi Tarfon, let's look at the chazaka of the mikvah. You know, we have our lach of status quo. That's called chazaka. If we knew the mikvah as of Sunday was mole, let's assume until we know otherwise. On Monday, when Reuven went in, it was still mole. So why, Rabbi Akiva, why are you pushing the agenda of the tummy himself? The tummy depends upon the status of the mikvah. Let's go back to the roots. And the roots of the problem are in the mikvah itself, which has a cheskas shalem. Oh. What's Rabbi Tarfon's breakthrough? He's going to prove that if something has a chazaka, let's say, for example, cheskas heter, we assume that it's mutter, we know it was mutter at that time, and then you find out that you made a mistake and it was really aser. There were facts on the ground, the information that you were not privy to, you didn't have access to that information. Says Rabbi Tarfon, what happens in such a case? What is the Torah saying? Is the Torah saying that now today we find out it is aser and therefore retroactively it was aser and the whole chazaka of heter, the cheskes heter, is completely null and void? It's completely mistaken? He says no. Really, it was mutter. The whole time it was mutter, because the Torah says rely on a cheskes heter. So before we knew about the Isur, it was taka mutter. So if you look in the time, if you go back in the time machine before this moment that we find out it was asur, it's really mutter. But now we have halach of l'mafreya. And the halach of l'mafreya allows us to analyze it as if we knew from the beginning that it was asur. But only from this point and on. So the paradox of the halacha according to Rabbi Tarfon is we can say A and not A at the same time. And even though they seem mutually exclusive, we can accept both. On the one hand, we could say that until this moment that we find out that it was asur, it was mutter. And on the other hand, we're going to say that from the moment that we find out it's asur, l'mafreya it was asur. So it means that if I would jump with a time machine into the period of time before we found out it was asur, then it was taka mutter. And we're not going to change that. What we're going to say is that now that we find that it's asur, from now and on, we're going to apply the mechanism of l'mafreya and assume that it was always asur. But at least during that time period, it was taka mutter. And I'll prove it to you, says Rabbi Tarfon. Take the case of Ben Grusha. The Torah says that if he did the avodah as a kohen, then even though we find out later on that he was a Ben Grusha, nevertheless, the avodah is kshera. Now, how could that be? We found out now that he was born a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutz, he's a Cholol. He was excluded from Kuhuna. The answer is the following. That on the one hand, until we found out that he was a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutz, he has a Cheskas Kosher. So at the moment that he brought the Avodah, that Chazokah tells you that the Avodah is Avodah Kshera. Now we have to activate a principle called a Mafreya, and we should pass all his Avodah retroactively. Here the Torah says no. The Torah says we're not going to apply the principle of l'mafreya. But what you see clearly is that l'mafreya only works from that moment and on. Because if l'mafreya means that we were always mistaken about it, how could it be possible that the Torah would say that the avodah that he did before was an avodah k'shera? It makes no sense. The only way you could possibly understand this gzeiras hakasuv of Paul Yadav Tirtza, that the Avodah is kosher, is by saying that the L'mafreya doesn't work the way we think it works in this case. Meaning, the Cheskas Kashrus of the Kohen is impeccable. We're never going to change that. His Avodah, therefore, is an Avodah Kshera. And the Torah says, you want to apply the principle of L'mafreya? Zeres HaKosin, the Torah says, we're not going to apply the principle of Mafreya, and his Avodah remains Kshera as it was. In other words, if the person who took upon himself to bring this Karbon would now come forward and say, well, do I have to replace this Karbon with a second one? We're going to tell him no. Why? Because when you brought the Karbon, it was Kosher. Now I know that the Kohen was a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. And therefore, I should say l'mafreya, the karma was not kosher. No, the Torah says no. We're not going to activate the principle of l'mafreya.
It's curious because in this case, he was always a Ben Grusha his whole life.
From the moment he was born.
Now it's on something. He was always a Ben Grusha, so why shouldn't it be that? His whole life forever has been not kosher kohen.
So that's what I'm saying. The Torah said it, and again, you can give all sorts of explanations, you know, when you're giving a drush in the shul about speculating why the Torah said this, but the Torah said that all his avodah is kosher. If from now on he does avodah, it's all possible. But all his so Rabbi Zalman says, wait a minute, if he was a kohen possible, how can the Torah say avodah is kosher? There's no such thing as an avodah of a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutz that's kosher. It just doesn't exist under the halachic stars. The answer must be that he wasn't apostle at that time. Why? Because Chazakas tell me that as far as that period of time is concerned, when the Chazaka was fully active, then it was kosher. Now we should say, l'mafreya, we found out that he was Ben Grusha, you know, they pulled the wool off our eyes, so to speak. The answer is, the Torah says, we're not going to change what happened in the past. In this particular context, there's no din of l'mafreya. But Rabbi Tarfon sees in this halacha of Avodaso Ksheira of Nimtzav Enochim that we see the way Chazaka operates. Chazaka operates, despite the l'mafreya, to be machshir and be matir anything that happened during that period of time. So for example, a tamei jumps into the mikvah. At that time on Monday, when he jumped into the mikvah, the mikvah had a cheskas kshera, cheskas tara. It was mole. We find out l'mafreya, So mafreya would mean that from now on we're going to have to treat the mikvah as chaser. But you can't deny that the tameh underwent the process of tara. And if he's tar, you can't change that status lamafreya. That's what Rabbi Tarfon wanted to prove.
Would that work if I take
Parshas? Wait, just 1 second. Yeah, what?
Parshas Zohar.
Oh, I don't know Parshas Zohar, but let me just get to Rabbi Akiva. Yeah. So now we're up to the punchline. So what does Rabbi Akiva say? He says the following. Just 1 second. Oh. Rabbi Akiva Machalik, this is, I'd say about 6 lines down from the top of the page, 355. He says the following, Cholol, why is the din of Cholos, it means Ben Grush Mechalutz, why is that so unique? Because Tzrichen Bezdin Leposlo. He can't take a Kohen Kosher and establish his status as a Chol without Bezdin. And therefore, as long as we didn't know that he was a Ben Grushim and Chalutza, there's no way that you can passel his Avoda because he didn't have Bezdin yet to actually change his status. This is what we call Kiyum Ledover, not Biru Ledover, that we discussed on many occasions. Avol Mikvah, the proper analogy for a Mikvah, the model for a Mikvah would be the Balmum case. Because in the Balmum case, we don't need Bezdin to decide and declare that he's passel. The very physical blemish on his body makes him apostle. Me'elav, he says, automatically. You don't need Bezdin. Therefore, Kol Shahoy apostle, he was a Balmum when he did the Avodah. Lo Nodas, we didn't know about that. But now he's apostle, Be'osa Shah. Now we say that he was apostle at the time that he did the Avodah. We didn't know it, but he was always apostle. Now we understand Rabbi Akiva's decision or his derivation in the case of the mikvah. The mikvah now we find out is chaser on Tuesday, right? So we don't know the status of the mikvah on Monday. The person, when he went into the mikvah, had a cheskas tumah. And now we find out that when he went into the mikvah, he went into a suffix mikvah. We didn't know if it's kosher or not. And therefore, in a suffix, you can't take him out of his chazokah, so he remains tomeh. Rabbi Tarfon, on the other hand, says no. That for all that period of time, until we found out that the mikvah was chaser, the mikvah was halachically is considered mole. Because the chazokah tells me what the status is. And even if you'll say l'mafreya, but you can't say l'mafreya if he went into a mikvah that was kosher and he now became tameh. You can't take a tar and convert him into a tameh. Rabbi Akiva says, no. We don't know exactly whether he was tar or not, whether the mikvah was kosher or not. We now have evidence that leads us to indicate that when he went into the mikvah, the mikvah was already a chaser. Therefore, he remains becheskas tumah. But what Rabbi Zalman is gaining for us in an unbelievable chiddush here is to explain Rabbi Tarfon. You know, Rabbi Akiva, we never had problems with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva made a lot of sense. You know, you have a suffix on the mikvah, the gavra himself is because his tomei, don't take him out of his chazok of his suffix. You know, every kohen, there's a suffix, maybe he's a balmum, we assume he's not a balmum, now we found out he's a balmum, so his avodah is psua. It's exactly like the case of the mikvah. We never had a problem. That wasn't the issue. The issue was Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says, forget about the cheskas tomei. Let's leave him as a tar based on the cheskas mikvah. But the analogy, the derivation from the case of Cholol, of Ben Grush Ben Chalutza, was wild. Ben Grush Ben Chalutza is a separate halacha in a case of Vadai that, you know, he did all this avoda, the Torah recognizes the avoda. Maybe the Torah is saying he has some vestige of Kedushas Kohuna, even though he's a Chol. I don't know. Whatever it might be. Or maybe it's just a technicality. We can't passel 50 years worth of his Avodah. We can go back in time and ask every single one of those. Whatever it might be. Comes along with Mr. Zalman. He says, no. What you have to analyze here in the case of a Ben Grushim and Chalutza is the method by which we are able to be Machshir's Avodah. If you're applying Lamafreya because he was born a Ben Grushim and Chalutza, How in the world can you take an avodah that's psula and turn it magically into an avodah kshera? The answer must be that until we find out that he's a ben grusha ben chalutza, he's a kohen kosher. And the Torah says about lamafreya that we don't apply and activate lamafreya, and that's why his avodah is avodah kshera. If that be the case, then the same logic should apply to a mikvah. Namely, that the Torah is saying about the mikvah that hits chazaka, like the case of a kohen, continues and continues and generates kashrus of the mikvah until you know otherwise. Yeah, Alan, you want to say something before?
Yeah, by Parsha Zachar, if they find out after they read Parsha Zachar that the Sefer Torah was busted.
I don't know, I'm not sure what the halacha is. I can just try to guess based on what we did here. Let's just try to intuit. According to Rabbi Akiva, I would say the following. We found out that we were reading from a Pasul of Sefer Torah. We found out that the Kohen was a Balbum. We found out that the Mikvah was Chaser and its Chazaka was not a valid Chaser. Then I would say he has to read it again. Now let's analyze it according to Rabbi Tarf.
I have a question, Rabbi, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is this understanding of Lamafreya, I've been learning recently about the din Chloe in this case, as opposed to the din, the other kind of din, or the general din, as a narrow reading of the din? In other words, is Lamafreya, here's a narrow reading of the din.
It sounds like Rabbi Tarfin is arguing that it's not a narrow reading of the din. It's a universal din, that Lamafreya works from now and on, but it doesn't undermine what happened before. Mm-hmm. And that's what Alan is pointing out, that if I read from the Sefer Torah assuming that it was kosher, then Rabbi Tarfu would insist that it was Yotzeh. Even though now he gloyed Milsa Lamafreya, but Lamafreya means that from now on I could say that he can't use the Sefer Torah, but you're not going to tell me that when he read from a kosher Sefer Torah he wasn't Yotzeh.
Right.
Yeah, because the Yediyah never changes the Chazakah up until that moment of Yediyah. Even after we have the Yediyah, the Chazakah itself is absolutely active and achieves its goal, even though now we know otherwise. That's the Pella of Rabbi Tarfon, the way Chazakahs work with Yediyah and Lamafreya. And therefore Rabbi Tarfon A would say that when you find out that the Cholol was a Cholol, it doesn't undermine all the avodas that he did when he had a chazaka. When you find out that the mikvah was, as of today, is chaser, we don't undermine all the tefillos that were done becheskas mikvah, because as far as the moments of the chazaka in the mikvah, starting from Sunday and on, until we know otherwise, the mikvah is a mole. And maybe therefore we can go a step further and apply this to Kriyas HaTorah, that the Sefer Torah has a din of kosher because it has its chazaka. Now you know otherwise. Okay, from now on we're not going to read from the Sefer Torah. That's not going to change the status of the Sefer Torah vis-a-vis the time period that, in other words, when I finished the Kriya I was Yotzeh. And like you say, David, this has universal implications, because there's so many things that we do based on chazakas, and then we find out later, wait a minute, there's something fishy over here. I'll give you an example. Like it says in Shulchan Aruch, I think, that you should check your tefillin once every 7 years.
Yeah.
So the last time I checked my tefillin was 7 years ago. So what? I've been wearing my tefillin for 7 years, and now I check my tefillin. Right?
I don't think there's a
lot
by tefillin. I think it's by mezuzah.
By mezuzah. But maybe there's a heder. So for 7 years I've been wearing these tefillin. And now you're telling me what? That you found a psul in the tefillin. And I checked it 7 years. If I never checked it, that may be different, you know. But if I checked it, so you tell me that for 7 years I wasn't wearing tefillin, you know. Rabbi Akiva would say that, because Rabbi Akiva says, "Well, I don't know what the status of the tefillin was 7 years ago, and it was a suffix." Okay, I'll grant you a suffix that whether you don't say tefillin. And Rabbi, I don't think Rabbi Tarfon would tolerate such a thing. He would say there's a universal halacha that you rely on chazakas. You did your test, you did your due diligence, you did what you have to do. Now you can't wear the tefillin anymore until you fix them. But don't tell me that it's going to undermine what I did until now based on the chazaka.
But I think maybe exactly that, which is the halacha, is by tefillin. You never have to check them. If you never,
I think it's a hidur every 7 years, like mezuzah.
Yeah, that means that we seem to hold like we're retarded, because otherwise, it's a crazy world. You never know. Right. You were born and die, and never know you were yotzu with tefillin.
So I guess Rabbi Akiva would say, look, you could rely on tzveikus. You don't know what the status of your tefillin is. On chazakas, and you're okay. But don't tell me that now that I found out that you made a boo-boo, you know. It's really scary when you think about it, because there are so many situations in which you could find out something that you didn't know
years later.
Years later, and it undermines everything you did for all that period of time.
Right.
So what are we going to say? All those brachas were brachas of Atola, and all those mitzvahs are gone. You get no schar mitzvah. It's all down the tubes.
Right.
Or maybe it's a self-ache, I don't know.
But this is like having a conference. You're an alert saying, by the way, that this thing from this bakery is puzzle. You may be in it for the last 2 years. You may be reading Trefa. Maybe you don't know.
Right.
You know, that you ate kosher, but I'm telling you, this is now Trefa. You don't know.
But again, the amazing thing is that Rabbi Zalman has succeeded in making some sense out of the analogy, because again, the kasha was so, the pshat in the Gemara was so difficult to come along and learn dinei kohen, and when everything is clear on the table, you know, it's not a question of, you know, what was he at that moment in time? He was definitely ben grusha ben chalutza. Was he a balmum? Definitely a balmum. What does that have to do with the case of Rabbi Akiva Rabbi Tarfa? We don't know what happened at that time when he jumped into the mikveh. Was the mikveh moly or was it chaser? Gay base. I can rack my brains. I'll never know. I need the Eliyahu Novi to tell him. So what's the tushdel here? It comes along with Rabbi Zalman, and he says that Rabbi Tarfa saw an amazing chiddush in the halacha of avodasa ksheira in the cholol, because how do you machshir the avodah of a cholol? He's a puzzle. The answer is that the chazaka generates a din vadai, that he was definitely a kohen kosher. I know he wasn't. The Torah says don't use lamafreya. Elsewhere you can use lamafreya, but not to change the reality as it was during that period of time. Lamafreya is good from now and on. You know, this is a famous principle called mikanu lahavu lamafreya. You know, Rav Shimon Shkop is very famous for it. But here we see it in Rav Yisrael. Now we go on to another sugi, which also is L'chora, the Gemara is making an equation which doesn't make sense. This is a sugya in Chulin on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, and you'll begin to see this in the second paragraph here on page 355. Okay, this is a little bit more complicated, okay, but we'll give it a shot and we'll see if we can somehow make some sense out of it. Okay. You can't shecht a dead animal. Once an animal dies, it's an avela. That's clear. Sometimes you have a case of a misukenis, where the animal is about to die, but you're not sure, was it still alive at the time of the shechita? You know, you're really cutting down seconds over here, because it was going to die, but you don't know if it died naturally, or maybe it died as a result of the shechita before it got a chance to die naturally. So we have a halacha called pirkus. Pirkus means that if we see the animal moving, there's some sort of a electrical impulses, you know, the animal is moving around, it's jerking itself around, then we assume it has some sort of power of life to it. And if it has a power of life, then we can assume that it died through the shechita, and therefore it's not nevela. And you and I would say, just throw it out. But in those days, you know, this was way too expensive to throw out. And even in our time, you know, this is not, the halacha doesn't work with that. You know, just throw it. I know people, they don't even ask Shabbos. You know, they'll a spoon will get mixed up and they don't know it was here, it was used for Yom, you know, was it used for no Sintam Shvam, was a hot water, so they don't know anything, so they just put it away. And today Baruch Hashem they may even decide to replace, but that's not the way the halacha operates. The halacha operates with clear cut guidelines, and we have to know if there was pirkus, then the shechita is a shechita kshera, and There's no room for hanky panky. No chumras here. We're not looking for the chumra of the week here. Yeah. Okay. But now the question is, at what point did we see the pirkus? Meaning, shechita, although you and I might think it's instantaneous, but halachically, it breaks down into tchila shechita, and emsa shechita, and sof shechita, you know, till he cuts both the veshet and the kanan, you know, the two simonim. And the question now becomes, at what point during the Shechita would Pirkus save the day, so to speak? And we could be machshir the Shechita because of the Pirkus. So one Shechita says, as long as we saw a Pirkus at the beginning of the Shechita, so when he started the Shechita, the animal was jerking itself around, we can assume that even in the split second that it took him till he finished the Shechita, it was still alive. You know, as we see the koach achius of the animal, and we assume that that chiyus continues for at least a minimum amount of time, enough to finish the shechit. So let's say, for example, you know, he's halfway through the shechit and he sees pirkus, for sure that would be good. However, according to this opinion, if the pirkus took place together with the gemar shechit, that last shlav, that's not good enough. Because then we don't know. That's already getting, you know, too close for comfort. Rav, on the other hand, in the Gemara in Masechta Chulin Daf Lamed Ches, has a proof, and this is the proof that we're going to have to rack our brains to figure out, that even if the Pirkus takes place at the Sof Shechita, that's enough to be Machshir the Shechita. Good. Now again, we're not talking about Kodshim here, we're talking about Chulin. We're talking about your regular, you know, Argentinian steer, and you know, the Israeli shochet flew to Argentina and he does the shechita there, whatever it might be. And Rav, all of a sudden, in order to prove his point that it's okay if the, you know, if the pirkus took place for some shechita, he stretches his arm to the laws of kodesh. A behema that's kodesh requires four avodos in order to be makrivit as a karbon. And the first of the four avodos is going to be shechita. So we need a good shechita. Okay. Now, when the Torah looks at that behema and determines whether or not it's kosher l'mizbeach, so the Torah wants to see that this animal is normal. What do I mean by normal? Let's say as opposed to bal mum. You know, we discussed many times that a behemoth balas mum is psula mizbeach. Correct? If it has a mum. We even spoke before about a kohen that has a mum, he's possibly avodas mizbeach. You know, somehow mizbeach doesn't tolerate a mum, whether it's on the gavra and the goof of the kohen, whether it's on the behemoth itself. So therefore, the Torah says, kiyulad. The opening words in the parasha of Behema for Kodshim is Kiyulad. Yulad means Leda. Leda means a normal birth. There's something called a Yotze Dofen. Yotze Dofen is what we call a cesarean birth. And an animal that was born through cesarean birth, because even with regard to animals, it's very easy to make this incision and take out the vlad, is Pasul Mizbeach. And that's all based on the pasuk kiyulad prat liyotzei dofen. But the Brisa that Rava quotes goes one step further. It says kiyulad tachas imo prat liyosam. This disqualifies an animal that's a yosam. Yosam means it's parentless. In this case, we're referring to the mother, meaning the mother died. The mother died before the Leda. If the mother died before the Leda, that's called a Yasam. Okay. So Rava says, let's analyze the scenario here of this Brisa of Pratli Yasam, that excludes a Yasam. And we're going to exclude possibilities, and then we'll come up with one possibility. The first possibility is that the mother died after the Leda. He says that's impossible. Because if the mother was alive b'shas Leda, then you can't call it a yasam. We're not assuming that after an animal is born that the mother's going to live forever and ever. The mother has to live just 1 second past the leda, and then it's not a yasam. We don't require that the mother be alive endlessly, right? Oh. Now we have a second possibility. That the mother died before the leda. Says Rabbi, that's also impossible. Because if the mother died before the leda, and therefore she was incapable of giving birth to the child, that's the same as a Yotzei Dofen. We've already excluded a Yotzei Dofen before we got Lafuke Yasam. Yasam has to be a separate category. Now, if the mother died before the leda, then the mother couldn't have possibly given birth to the Vlad. It must be, by process of elimination, that this Vlad is a Yotzei Dofen. So again, Yotzei Dofen, I told you before, means that we made an incision and we took out the Vlad. You don't have to go into all those gory details. If the mother dies before the Leda, forget it. That's a Yotzei Dofen. The opposite of Yotzei Dofen is Tiyula. That should be a normal birth process. The mother has the ability, the power to push the Vlad out. If the mother's dead already, so again, let's go over the two possibilities which we excluded both of them. If the mother died after the Leda, how can you call the Vlad a Yasam? Well, you can say the mother has to live. For how long does the mother have to live after the Leda? And if you're going to tell me the mother died before the Leda, that's called Yotzei Dofen, because there's no way, no how, that the mother could have expelled, the birth process, the Vlad, because she's dead already. So that would be Yotzei Dofen. Elavadai, by law of process of elimination, what are we left with? In the language of Rava, ze porish lebisa, v'ze porish lechay. That simultaneously, she died, and the Vlad was born. And even though, at the time of the Leda, she was alive, it's still called the Yasam, because by the time the Vlad is born, she's already gone. So again, it's not a Yotzei Dofen because she had the ability as a live mother to give birth to the Vlad. So it's certainly not a Yotzei Dofen. On the other hand, it's not that she was alive at the time of the Vleda and she lived beyond the Vleda, because that would certainly be kosher. But rather, she died simultaneous with the Vleda. Zeh parish lemisa v'zeh parish lechayim. Which means, says Rava, that even though there was a pirkus before the Gemara Leda, because otherwise if there was no pirkus, she would have been dead already, and she couldn't have possibly, expelled the baby, given birth to the baby. But nevertheless, since there was no pirkus at the time of her death, which means at the time of the Gemara Shechita, therefore the Vlad is considered already what? A Yasam. In other words, logically, you would have said that the Vlad is not a Yasam because she was alive at the time of the Leda. But no. That's only because you're trying to exclude Yotzei Dofen. If you're only trying to exclude Yotzei Dofen as a category, you're right. She was alive at the time of the Leda. That's not a Yotzei Dofen. But now the Torah has excluded a new category called the Yasam, which means that when the Vlad, so to speak, I don't mean this literally, figuratively, stands on 2 feet, it still has a mother. But the mother died simultaneously with the Leda, so you never had a moment in time when this Vlad had a mother who was alive. Okay, so he says the following: V'kach b'pirkus tzarech chius b'sof hashchita. So says Rava that you see that you need pirkus not earlier, but at the sof hashchita, because if there was no pirkus at the sof hashchita, it means she died simultaneously with the birth of the animal, and therefore it's possible to toras yasam. So all of Afarshim raised the following questions before Rav Yisrael Meltzer steps up to the plate. Ein shum havana lechora b'dinyon zeh, this equation, shall yasam b'karban lepirkus b'shchita. And therefore there's no dinyan here. Meaning, with regard to kodshim, there's a separate halacha that the Torah said that a behemas, behemal mizbeach, who's a yasam, is posel mizbeach. And therefore the pirkus that came before the sof shechita is not enough. So if Rava was only analyzing the halachas of kodshim, he would certainly be justified and come to the conclusion that the earlier pirkus is not sufficient, because since she was mesa b'shas gemar shechita, the pirkus that took place before the gemar shechita is irrelevant. There's a psul of yasam. But what does that have to do with shechitas chulin? In the case of shechitas chulin, one could argue against Rava that all you need is pirkus before the gemar shechita, and that pirkus gemar shechita means that the mother is considered alive. And if the mother's considered alive, then let's go ahead and check the vlad. Comes along Rabbi Zalman, he says the following. And Rabbi Zeman here gives you a tamsis, you know, some sort of a, how do we call it, an abstract, you know, to summarize, yeah, like a summary. He says the following. According to those who argue with Rava, why do they say that all you need is a pirkus during the process of Shechita, by B'tchilasa or B'yamtsa? They would certainly agree that you need chiyus until the end of the Shechita, because you can't shech the dead animal. Ella, but rather they hold that since there was pirkus before the Gemar Shechita, is vadai yimshach od hachius ad liachas Shechita. Notice, all we need to know is that there was chius in the animal, that's pirkus, before the Gemar Shechita, at some point during the Shechita, before the Gemar Shechita. That tells me that the animal will continue to live until after the Shechita. Why? Because pirkus is ktsas koach habeima. The pirkus is not something that's just natural on its own. It comes from the life force of the animal. It's the koach habeima. It's a pa'ula, it's an action that the animal is doing. The animal is actually jerking itself around. Is therefore, if the pirkus proves that the animal still has this koach, then gam Leda haba mikoach ha'em hi pirkus. Okay, this is the tough part. He says that according to this shita, leda itself is equal to pirkus. How did the animal get out of the birth canal? It must have been that the mother pushed it out. That's like pirkus. Just like you say that pirkus is an active force of the animal that indicates chiyus, so to leda itself, like pirkus, is an active force. Says Rava, wait a minute. If that's correct, then how do you understand the halach of yasam? Efshal lomer shebehema chaya ktsas zman achrei koach. It can't be correct the way you said it, that since the animal did this pirkus, therefore it must be that the animal is alive a little bit longer, so the pirkus started at or coincided with the tchilas hashchita, but it must be the animal is alive even besof hashchita. Because if that be the case, then if the animal gave birth in the case of kodshim, right, it must be b'kach ha'em. And you always want to add a little bit of time from the manifestation of that koach until you finally agree that the animal is dead. So therefore, how can there be such a thing as a yasam? As we said before, all you need is that the mother live for a fraction of a second after the leda. And you're telling me that leda is like pirkus. So in pirkus, you said, well, the pirkus b'tchila shchita is going to indicate that the animal is still alive at the time of the Sof Shechita, because if the animal manifests and exhibits a certain koach of chius at point T1, we assume it remains alive to point T2, then in the case of Leda, we should assume that since the Leda is like the Pirkus and indicates the mother's active ability to do an action of koach, then she remains alive even a second after the Leda. If you're telling me that Pirkus is a koach and the animal continues to live even after that koach is manifested, so it's fascinating here, because what Mrs. Zalman is able to do here is to magically take two categories in Halacha, two worlds in Halacha, and find a common link between the two. He perceives through the surface. It gets down to the underlying reasoning here. Offhand, before Mrs. Zalman, what kind of tsushta, what kind of equation does Rava have from Kudshim? And Kudshim is a new psul called Yasam. What does that have to do with Pirkus and Shkitas Chulin? The answer is that Rabbi Sazama reveals to us the equation or the analogy between Leda and Pirkus. That's what we were missing. That just like in Pirkus, we see the Pirkus as some sort of a life force, which allows us to assume that the animal lives even beyond that moment of what I call the manifestation, the koach of chiyus. And therefore, if there was Pirkus b'tchila shkita, we assume the animal was alive b'sof shkita. So too, in the case of Leda, by process of analogy, Leda is also a koach of the mother. And if that koach of the mother manifested itself at point T1, according to your logic, it should mean that she was alive even at point T2. So she manifested that koach achius of Leda at the time of the Leda. Now you want to say, well, the animal's a yasam, because when it was born, it didn't have a mother. The mother died immediately at the time of the Leda. No! Leda tells me, like Pirkus, according to that Shita, that she's alive a little bit longer. All we need is that she carry, you know, she go over that red line and she's alive at the time of the Leda, immediately after the Leda. Shalinyan yasam, ainon tzrichim lekach el chius. Right, we don't need some sort of a superpower in order to indicate and demonstrate that the mother is still alive. We just need chiyus. That should be tachas ima. Ubehechre she'ena yosom, elik shemesoe mamish bediuk im gmar leda. What does that mean? If you're going to tell me that she died simultaneous with the end of the leda, then you're going to have to assume that the koach that she had for the leda died right before the Leda. And then it becomes a Yotze Dolphin. So why do you need the Psul of Yosom? It's Kol She Yotza Vlad. Shalomach Mas Kochem Afil Derech HaRechem Arei B'chlal Yotze Dolphin. Muchach She'en L'chali Ben Koach L'chius. Bizman, alright, there are a lot more details here, but we want to just get the major point here. Bizman She'esh Chius Yesh Koach. And that koach is manifested even for a little bit of time afterwards. And therefore, just like in the case of Pirkus, we're going to assume that Pirkus at the beginning of Shkita means that she was alive, the animal's alive at the end of Pirkus, at the end of the Shkita. Here, the mother giving birth was alive at the end of the Leda. L'chein tzorach, therefore, comes along Rav and he says, you see from here that Pirkus has to be b'sof Shkita. And that's going to indicate that b'sof shechita the animal was alive. And the same thing is going to be if the leda continues even beyond, you know, beyond the leda itself, she was alive, then the animal is not a yasam. But if the animal dies simultaneous with the leda, then we're not going to assume that koach achius extended beyond the leda, and therefore the animal was born as a vlad yasam without a mother. Okay. Now, Rabosai, do you have page 356?
Can.
Okay.
We do? Oh, yes.
It, you may have to turn it on the side a little bit.
This direction. Turn it on. Oh, there you go.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Now we get to what's called in Reb Chaim's terminology, Tzvei Din. and he gives here a list of Rabbi Zalman's Tzvei Dinim. Not an exhaustive list, but a few examples. Now, in some of these, he does such a quick summary, it's hard to figure out without going back to the original what Rabbi Zalman had in mind, but we'll just mention it. The first one is very good because here he fleshes it out for you. He says, with regard to Avelus, there are Tzvei Dinim. Number one, Avelus means that a person is broken up, Nebuch, over the loss of a relative. He calls it Sheis Atzev Belibo Bishvil Misas Krova. Etzev. Etzev is, I guess you call it, anguish or grief. Then, the other dimension of Avelus are the certain dinim that apply to the Avel. The first din of Atzvus begins with the death of his relative. As soon as he finds out, Nebuch, that a relative died, he's already in the state of Atzvus. But yet, the halacha suspends the dinim of Avelus until after Kvura. And up until the point that, you know, the deceased has not, as long as the deceased has not yet been interred, then the dinim of Avelus are suspended. He's an onin, but not an oven. So Rabbi Zalman now analyzes the following halacha. There's an iser called Akrovas Kodshim, that an Avel is enjoined from Kodshim. And he wants to suggest that there's a little bit of a Pella over here. And the law of Kodshim, the iser Akrovas Kodshim, applies even before Kvura. And this we derive from Maisa Sheni. There's something called Vidui Maisa Sheni, which I believe is in Parashas Ki Tovo. And there, in the Vidui, he declares, Lo achalti mimenu, I didn't eat from Maisa Sheni, be Oni. Oni, with an Aleph, is a reference to the live relative before his deceased relative has been buried, which we call an Oni. And an onen is not allowed to have any karbonos. Lo achalti mimeni bioni. Just like my sesheni has kedusha, all karbonos have kedusha.
This is about Tokus Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron.
About what? About Nadav Aviv?
Yeah, right.
Oh boy, that's, I remember that as a complicated sugi with a couple.
Very complicated sugi, but that's Moshe Rabbeinu held that he was an onen and he shouldn't leave from the korban. And Aaron learned that he should.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, let's see if we can get by this. So again, Rabbi Zalman is asking the obvious question, why should an onen before kvura be enjoined from kodshim when we just finished saying and established that dine kodshim depend upon kvura, and now it's before kvura? So he wants to suggest to Rabbi Zalman that the law of lo achalti meni bioni, this isur kodshim, is not a din in the avel, but rather it's a din in the kodshim, that the kodshim should not be brought or eaten by someone who is in avelus. In other words, let's say, for example, Shlomim. Like Shlomim is besimcha. So imagine he's in a state of atzvus and he's bringing karbonos as if he's coming in front of Hashem. Every karbon is lifnei Hashem. Milashon akrova, it's a ritzu lifnei Hashem. How could he be in a state of ritzu lifnei Hashem if his relative just died and he's in a state of atzvus? So his psychological state is enough to preclude him from achilas kodshim. Kodshim cannot be eaten be atzvus. That's halach ready in kodshim. Says Rabbi Zalman, if you were going to tell me that the iser akrovas karbon in avelus is halach in avelus, then why should it be any different than all the classical dinim of avelus that only go into action, that are only activated after the kvura? And yet we know from a pasuk in Chumash that the iser of kodshim applies during aninus before kvura. The answer is because that's a din in kodshim, that the kodesh, the basar kodesh, cannot tolerate a person who's psychologically in a state of avelus. In din, you know, his state of an avel and all the dini avelus that emanate from his status as an avel, those all depend upon kvura. They are engendered by kvura. But now we're not talking about Dine Avelus, says Rav Yisrael. We're talking about Dine Kodshim. And in Dine Kodshim, the Kodshim have to be Nechal, or Nikrav, by someone who doesn't suffer this anguished state of Avelus. So it's interesting. It's an anguished state, but not necessarily a Din in Dine Avelus. But all the Dinim, since all the Dinim of Avelus are only Chal after Kvura, this din that Issa Kachim is before Kvura must be, it's not a din in Avelus, but it's a din in Hakrov. So I was wondering the following. You know, there's a din which I saw in a couple of different Masechtas. It's in Ksubis, it's in Maikot, that an Onen is not allowed to wear tefillin. And only after he comes back from the Beis HaKvaros does he put on tefillin. In fact, I think there's a Shita Rambam that even after he comes back from the Beis HaKvaros, if that was the very day in which his he died, so he doesn't wear tefillin. But anyway, so I'm just thinking to myself, according to this Rabbi Zalman, the thought crossed my mind, that again, if Dinei Avelus are suspended until after Kvura, why can't he wear tefillin? And the answer might be that it's a din in tefillin. That tefillin require a certain state of simcha, because it's like a ritzui of Ritzitzitz, I don't know what, and therefore, since he's already in a state of atzmus as a result of the misa, just like he's excluded from karbonos, he's excluded from tefillin. Rabbi Zalman says that halach that he's excluded from karbonos is halach in the kedushas karbon. Maybe we could say that this halach in kedushas tefillin, like for example, a person who doesn't have a guf naki, he's not allowed to wear tefillin. That would be machal kedushas tefillin. So maybe avelus. Actually, the Gemara derives this from the pasuk in Yechezkel says pe'er, that tefillin is called pe'er. So you see that it's a din in tefillin, that the pe'er of tefillin is antithetical to his anguish in the state of atzvus al misas krovo, even before kvura.
I'm not sure. I hear what you're saying, but it may not be a din of atzvus. It may be a din that in tefillin you have to always be aware of your tefillin. Where they are because they're right. So Aninus itself is a continuous Eschadas.
Right, right. So, but again, it might be. So Alan is saying the Din Aninus. That would also answer Rabbi Zalman's question. Maybe the Eastern Carbon is the Din Aninus. Yeah. But Rabbi Zalman is saying that if you assume that Avelus is antithetical to Carbonos, and that Din applies for all 7 days. Then so you're saying, but in the case of tefillin, it's only for that first day.
Right.
So therefore, it might be a din in aninus, which is very interesting because
what does aninus mean? Sorry,
aninus is the state of a person when he lost a relative, but the relative hasn't yet been buried, and that aninus terminates with kvura, and then it transforms itself into avelus. I have a feeling that Rav Soloveitchik on this point would say it a little differently. He would say, I think, that Misas HaKarov itself generates Avelus, but since he's Osik B'Mitzvah, until the Kvura, he's focused on single-mindedly, exclusively getting the job done of Mitzvah's Kvura, therefore he's part of all Mitzvahs, including Aninus, but including Avelus. But the Mitzvah's Avelus really adheres in the Misas HaKarov. For technical reasons, we have to postpone it. Because also the mitzvah part of the mitzvah, but he's really chayv in potential in aninus, and that expresses itself in various isurim. In avelus, I'm saying, but in terms of isurim, that already is something different. You know, to himanut mi isur, it's to avoid violating an isur and be passive. Don't eat kachim or don't wear tefillin. That already doesn't have to interfere with his mitzvah of kvura. And those dinim, in other words, the Rav would say that the Shema Avel and Gavritz Chal with the Misa. The Kiyum of Avelus as a mitzvah, that already depends on Kvura. And that would answer all the dinim. Yeah, for example, an Onen is enjoined from drinking wine or eating meat. Rav Zalman would say that's a result of his Atzvus, because drinking wine and eating meat would bring him to an antithetical state of Simcha, and Halacha wants him to be in a state of Atzvus. Of Atzvus, we don't want him to bury the dead, you know, as a cold, you know, he's emotionally involved in Atzvus. But the other way of saying is to say that no, he has a shame on him as far as Isurim is concerned, not as far as Kiyum Avel is. Kiyum Avel is already a mostly mitzvah part of the mitzvah. As far as Isurei Avel, those apply whether it's enjoining him from drinking meat, from eating meat, drinking wine, or whether it means enjoining him from wearing tefillin, enjoining him from bringing a carbon, eating a carbon, and so forth. David?
If the Isur were tefillin, when you're on it, is because you're person in an anguish state,
right,
wouldn't he be anguished all 7 days of Shiva? In which case, what, he shouldn't be wearing tefillin all those days?
I think the anguish of being involved with what's called Mesa Mutalafanov is
different.
Again, it's hard to say these words, but aesthetically, you know, the dead body is that he has to bury. That's
right.
That's already puts him into a state of, you know, he's just involved with kvura. You know, he's involved with the earth itself, so to speak. It's not pe'er. You know, it's golel ba'ofer. It's golel ba'ofer, and pe'er means, you know, you've got to have a. Now he gives here a whole bunch of other cases of tzvei din, and some of which I can't, you know, give me a few minutes just to get this in under the wire, because I just want to make sure we finish with Rav Issa Zalman. Tomorrow I want to start a new chapter.
Have you been to court?
Can you just hold on for just I want to get through the text, and I have about 5 minutes. So let's say like this. He says, number one, there's halacha with regard to ritzui tzitz, which means that if the Kohen Gadol is wearing the tzitz, that's matir or generates a ritzui karbon even in tumah. So Mrs. Zal wants to say that this hides, conceals two different dinim. It's not really one din. One halacha is that there's a ritzui karbon and a nesias avon. What it means is that if, let's say, there was a violation in which a carbon was brought betumah, that's an avon, that's a sin that hovers, you know, that's like an albatross that hovers over. So there's a din of ritzui carbon that the carbon is mafkia the avon, the sin itself. Then there's a second din of ritzui tzitz, which is the more positive halach of ritzui tzitz, that the tzitz is maratza. It makes the carbon into a carbon sheyesh bo ritzui. Right, every carbon has the purpose of every single carbon is ritzui. And you would say that since this carbon is tamei, there's no possibility of ritzui, and that's what the tzitz accomplishes. It generates ritzui even for a carbon that's tamei. So it does two functions, and it's number one in the siyas avon, and number two, it's a ritzui carbon. So what we have to do now is open up the Rambam in Hilchos Bias Migdash, Perek Dalet Halacha Zayin, which I don't have the time to do right now, and see how Rabbi Zalman explains the Rambam based on these Tzvei Dinim, these two powers or impacts of the Ritzui Tzitz. He says that there's an Isur to bring Sa'ar, right, leavened bread with a karbon. CR is a certain sour dough. Yeah, and he says that this conceals two different dimensions. Number one, by bringing the sa'ar together with a carbon, that's one avera. And then there's another Easter independent, that if you bring sa'ar at l'shem carbon, for the purpose of being a carbon. And he says the difference would be enough to be gabi the shear of Seyar, of Siar, in that Isur. He says, look in Isur Mizbeach, Perkei Alocha Aleph. I wish I had a Rambam here. I don't have one, but Joel's not, what's his name?
John.
John is not here today. He usually takes care of this for me. I don't know why he's not here. I hope everything's okay. He hardly misses. But in Isur Mizbeach, apparently, you can have a minimum shear if you brought the Siar L'Shem Karma, but if it's coming to as an add-on to a carbon that you're bringing, then the halacha requires a greater shear, because otherwise it loses its significance and doesn't impact on the carbon itself. Then there's a similar kind of tzvei dinim in melach, right? There's a mitzvah upon the kohen to bring melach with each carbon. So one din is in the chefza, in the carbon itself, that the carbon has to be maluach, and that's din midinei karbanos. And then, as far as the kohen is concerned, there's an additional mitzvah, a chova that he has to bring, that he has to bring melach. And he hakrovas melach al kol karbon kemitzvah miyuchedes b'fnei atzma. Because the karbon itself is the melach. The melach itself has its own kiyum. It's not that the karbon needs melach, but there's a kiyum. It reminds me what the Rav used to say about shiluach hasair. That shiluach hasair is number one, a din in the sair, and number two, it's also a din in the kohen. So as far as the kohen is concerned, his mitzvah, he just have to bring it out to the midbar. As far as the kiyum of the sair and the chefza, you have to send it off the tzuk. He says that the two dinim in mitzvah min ha-muvchar in karbon. Number one, you could have many karbonos, but one is more muvchar than the other. That's a kiyum, but it has nothing to do with the isurim mizbeach. Maybe we could call that, as David said before, a din klali, that you always have to do min ha-muvchar, zekei liyamdei. But then there's another din, that if the karbon itself is mufka from muvchar, let's say it's a chole, then that's already an Isur HaKrav Al Gabi Mizbeach. It's not just you forfeit a super extra kiyum of a hidur of Muvchar. Lumat Zeh, he says in the opposite way, sometimes when Mrs. Alba takes two halachas and makes them into one. Till now we've been smashing one halacha and making it into two. What about the reverse? So he gives the example of Tmura. Because we would have said in Tmura that there are two different dinim. There's one din in the Ratzon HaMemir Lahotzi HaHegdesh L'chulin, that he wants to take this Kodesh and be Memir it such that this is no longer Kodesh. Then there's another din of being Makfis, the Kedushas Karmon onto Chulin. So it goes in both ways, but Rabbi Zalman proves with a great length of presentation that the Isur Eino Ela B'Behemas HaKodshim Sherotza LaHotzio LaChulim. It's all a din in the fact that you wanted to take the Kodshim, and by doing the first Behemah, and by doing a Tmura, a Hamara, you want to remove its status as Kodshim. The fact that you are now taking a Behemah Schol and being Matfis Kedusha onto that Behemah, that's not an Isur at all. And Rav Zevin wants to say that he thinks that this chiddush is very problematic. He has theories to this chiddush. All right, Rav Osai. So we want, I think you wanted to ask a question from before. I just want to make sure we...
Yeah, I didn't know this was in there. Is there, can we use this sort of analysis to figure out how to do by a ben bakua? Okay, by a ben bakua, the mother was nishchat, and then they removed the v'lad. There's a bachelor because I think whether the vlad needs shkita or not. I think.
Right. I know it as it doesn't need shkita. Maybe there's.
That's right. Right. Yeah, but that's what I wanted to talk about. So, and then that behemoth, the vlad is mutar b'chila, right? Without shkita.
Right.
But how is it mutar b'chila when it's also b'espino?
Also b'espino is only if you shechted both of them on one day.
They did. They shechted him and his mother exactly at the same time.
Well, osa espeno means when you did two maisa shchitas. You did a maisa shchita on the aim and a maisa shchita on the vlad. Here, one maisa shchita is chal for both the vlad, the mother, and the child.
And is it clear that osa espeno doesn't count that way because he is nishchat?
Right, he's nishchat, but not a maisa shchita.
He's only nishchat in halacha.
Right, there's one maisa shchita. That's so not osa espeno. Osa espeno means the cruelty, so to speak. You know, if I want to say Malbatsh in terms of doing two Maisa Shechita, one on the Vlad and one on the Mother. But here, the Halacha says that it's already considered Shachut, but the Maisa Shechita was one Maisa Shechita.
That's what I think. Analyze whether what the Maisa